bunch of factors came together. You know, the government's own financial interest, pressure from WHO. And once the ban came in, you know, and then that's when all the negative information started flowing in. So, you know, instead of realizing that they have made a mistake.
Brazil and India are very much alike in so many ways. Brazil had a partial ban on vaping. When I say partial, because the legislation in 2009 was flawed legislation because they didn't consider the manufacturing. So it was forbidden to sell, to import, and to advertise, but they forgot to put manufacturing.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Vaping Unplugged podcast. Everything you need to know about vaping and tobacco harm reduction.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to the podcast Vaping Unplugged, where we discuss harm reduction, vaping, and less risky nicotine alternatives globally, and basically all about tobacco harm reduction. My name is Lisa. I will be your host today, and we are hosting our amazing partners and prominent vaping advocates, Samra Chaudhry, who is a journalist, consumer advocate, and director of Association of Vapers India, and Alexandra Lucian, who is a vaping advocate, also journalist, founder of the organization Direta. We will get to you very soon because I think my introductions are quite short, so I'll give you some time to make your own introduction about yourselves. Today, we will be talking about the article that Samrat wrote for FilterMag. Actually, it was a very interesting article where we could read about the vape bans during the flights, and there were case studies both from India and Brazil. And Alexandra and Samrat collaborated on this article, so I thought, why not? Let's just chat about that. So I'm really thankful for your time today. And let's just start with quick introductions before we dive into the topic and talk about vaping. Samrat, maybe you could start about your introduction. So could you tell our listeners about yourself, maybe your vaping journey, and also the Association of Vapers India? What is the organization up to at the moment?
Thank you, Lisa, for having me. And hi, Alexandro. So I'm Samrat. I'm from India. I'm based in Mumbai, which is a large city. I have been a lifelong smoker, and then I switched to vaping. And then, you know, bans started coming in India. We have a federal system where states can ban. So when the bans started coming, we, a group of us vapers decided to organize, come together under a banner. And we formed AVI, which is the oldest formally registered PHR charity in Asia, right? So we've been around since 2016. We have been in discussion since 2014. And so what, you know, we could manage to quit finally, you know, with the help of vaping, and we want others to also have that opportunity. And in India, we have a huge burden of tobacco. You know, about 1.3 million people die from it every day. 270 million people use these, you know, smoking or smokeless tobacco products. And we want them to also have that opportunity, you know, and especially in countries where there isn't a strong public healthcare system or people cannot address the negative outcomes of long-term tobacco use, it's even more important that we have good preventive measures in place. And, you know, I was listening to Dr. Faslinov speak, you know, just recently, and he's saying this is a project which is funded by the smoker, you know, that they can, they're funding their journey out of serious tobacco harms to something that can potentially extend or save their lives. So this is what we are doing in India. We do a lot of work. We do a lot of awareness work, a lot of which is now restricted because of the ban and, you know, the ban on promotion and how loosely it is applied. So, you know, even if you're talking about the benefits of vaping, sometimes that counts as promoting vaping. So, you know, we're in a very tricky space, but there are lives at stake. So we try to do our best. We try to stick to science, facts, sharing research, and also rebutting a lot of misinformation that's coming out in the media. So so we do that at one end. We also look at the legal aspect. So we have moved the court in a couple of instances challenging some of these bans. And we also work on research aspects, you know, to develop some research in the country so that it can inform policymakers. We also speak and represent or give representations to policymakers every now and then. And also, you know, we try to encourage vapers to get more involved in advocacy. So we have some movement on that front too.
Amazing. Yeah, we'll definitely be talking more about the situation in India, because I think India has really harsh regulation on vaping. It's a total vape ban. So let's discuss later on before moving on to the bans during the flights and criminalization of personal use. Let's talk about the implications of the total ban. But for now, I want to move to Alexandro and ask Alexandro to talk about himself and do a quick introduction. Even though I don't think it's the first time you're doing the podcast with us, we love doing that with you. So thank you again for jumping on and having this energy to chat with us. So what's going on with Direta at the moment? And maybe a quick introduction about yourself.
Sure. It's I who have to thank you, because it's always a pleasure to be here. Actually, my story is very similar to Samrat. I was a heavy smoker. I smoked for more than 15 years, smoking 3 packs every day. I tried to quit with everything you can think of, gums, patches, medicine, and nothing worked. So when I found out about vaping, I stopped smoking in a way that I couldn't believe. And then I start to research about it. In 2021, I started Direta, direta.org, which is my organization, which I am president. It's also an organization to represent consumers. And we do a lot of the work that Samrat do in India. We try to make awareness campaigns, represent consumers, trying to talk to policymakers and decision makers to properly regulate vaping in Brazil, because Brazil also suffers a lot from misinformation. We have the organizations, anti-vaping organizations, mainly funded by Bloomberg, telling every lie that you can think of, and we are used to those lies. It's worse than smoking, you have more nicotine, and it's so on and so on. I think that those who are listening to us already know some of those arguments that does not have base on science. So we have those projects like going to Brasilia, talk to politicians, making petitions. We have a petition with more than 10,000 signatures. And in Brazil, we have a percentage of about 9% of smokers. But we have to remember that Brazil has a very big population. We have more than 160 million adults. So every 1% of Brazil is a lot of people. Our 9% is almost the same of the 30% of France or the 35% of any other country of Europe. So despite having a low figure in percentage, it's a lot of people that are still smoking in Brazil. We think about 20 million people, and those are using nicotine in the worst way possible. And vaping is a way that they can use and can have nicotine. They can use the substance in a non-destructive way. And that's why we try to do combating misinformation, awareness campaign, and trying to save lives, because that it's what's happening to me when I smoked for 15 years and I switched completely to vaping.
Well, you were talking, I was just thinking how big of an inspiration both of your organizations must be to all of the THR advocates around the globe, because right now we're talking about two countries that have probably the most restrictive and prohibitive stance on vaping. I know in Brazil there were some discussions that there might be a regulation change, but we'll get back to that as well, Alexandro, a bit later, and just give listeners a full background of what's the situation in a country, and then we can shift to the topic of what Samrat was writing in an article of why smaller wins, or it might seem as a smaller win, but actually all battles matter. But before that, Samrat, maybe you could tell our listeners about the example in India. I was researching that as well, and it's quite restrictive. I even wrote a blog about that once, and I was just fascinated how consumers even might be under very, very prohibitive prohibitive environment, and that's very stressful, I guess. So could you tell us what are the implications of this total vape ban that is right now in India?
Sure. So you're right that India has one of the most restrictive vape regulation around the world. And I'd like to give you a little bit of a background. So India has the second highest number of smokers and tobacco users in the world. So it's a significant country where risk reduction or THR measures could have been implemented and would have shown significant amount of change, in increase in life expectancy and in all the other parameters. India also loses about 1% of its GDP every year to tobacco related mortality and morbidity, right? So it has a significant problem. Now, it seems, this is like from having worked in this field for a while, that the WHO sees the Western nations and the developing and the nations and the LMIC nations as two separate blocks, right? So while the entire West, almost the entire West, or even Australia now, you can get, vapes without prescription, has regulated these products, the entire focus is on LMICs and trying to get as restrictive policies in there as possible. Now, WHO and, along with Bloomberg, which also significantly funds the WHO, and they have significant influence in these countries because they fund a lot of health programs and they work with the government. So they have a seat at the table. So they have a lot more influence in pushing restrictive policies in these nations. And they have succeeded. So India became sort of a poster boy for this. And there was intense pressure on the government to ban these products. And, this ban came around in 2019, whereas actually the discussion for the ban began in 2014. That's the time when the COP happened in Moscow and, a statement was put out that the government should either regulate or ban. So India took obviously the more restrictive, option. And so the movement had been on since then. So in 2019, Juul decided to launch in India, and that really scared. So you should also note that India, the government itself, is a big participant in the tobacco trade, as in it owns significant shares of not just one, but all the major tobacco companies in the country, right? So it also controls tobacco cultivation to tobacco production. So it's not just, so it controls the entire value chain. So for it, it's a cash crop from which it makes a lot of revenue. It also taxes these products, so that's also revenue. So a bunch of factors came together, the government's own financial interest, pressure from WHO. And once the ban came in, and then that's when all the negative information started flowing in. So, instead of realizing that they have made a mistake, and also, when a ban comes or when actually a law is enacted, and I wish Alexandro all the best in their efforts, and I hope Brazil shows the way that these bans can be reversed. It becomes quite difficult to reverse these bans because it requires a lot of political will and effort to overturn a legislative action. So once the ban came in 2019, a lot of misinformation started flowing in. So, and then the government also did two really, crazy things. One is that they banned public institutions from researching THR products. So there's a ban on research, you can research cannabis, you can research cocaine, heroin, but you cannot research vaping. So that becomes a significant roadblock. Because then the argument is, okay, all these studies are in the West. We don't have local studies, but you have banned those studies. So how are you going to produce research that is going to guide policymaking? So that was quite crazy. And then the next thing they did was they banned the media from publishing or broadcasting anything that promotes vaping. And that the idea of promotion is like, so the example they highlighted was few public health officials, right? Like, and including from the government, talking about the need for harm reduction in tobacco regulations. They were not talking about any product, but that got labeled as promotion, and an order was sent to all media houses to not talk about vaping at all. So, the media cannot talk about it. There cannot be research on it. And that limits the conversation that you can have around these products. So it makes our job a lot more difficult because, even to say that vaping is safer can be considered promotion if you're really anti-vaping. Because that could be incitement to. That's why I was asking Alexandro, how you can manage to do that. But here there's actually an order from the government. So it is very difficult for vapers, but there is another side to the story. This is a developing world, right? Cannabis has been banned in this country for 70 years, and you can find it every 500 meters, right? There is someone who's while they've banned it, they do not have enough enforcement capability to ensure that the ban is effective. I'm sure that's happening in Brazil, that's happening in Thailand, that's happening in Mexico, that's happening in every developing world that they have tried to ban these products, that you have a huge illegal market. Now, what that does is, from a consumer perspective, it raises the prices of the products, but even worse, it takes away all consumer protections on what's in these products, because where they're coming from, what's in them, where they're, it is something that you're putting in your lungs. So, it is a serious matter. What happened in Ivali, something like that could easily happen because, there is no way to check what you're getting in these products. So from a consumer perspective, the prices go up. There is more harassment because, police, they just use this excuse, it's banned. So use and possession is not banned. Sale and commercialization is banned. But that doesn't stop police from, walking up to someone and say, it's banned, so you have to pay a huge fine. So there is harassment of consumers, but there's also availability. And wide ability. What concerns us is that we do not know what's in them and if it can lead to a problem later on. So it's tough life, but, people in poor countries do find a way around legislation. So, there is a positive and a negative to it. What would be best is that the government understands that when it cannot specially provide any public health care, let people at least have the option to reduce risk to themselves.
Yeah, it's a shame that they don't understand that and they're basically depriving consumers of this opportunity to consume less risky nicotine alternatives rather than consuming nicotine in a way more dangerous manner. Alexandra, I want to move to you with basically the same question, but about Brazil. It's been a quite turbulent situation in Brazil recently, with Anvisa kind of reconsidering some kind of to come up with the regulation, and we got our hopes up at some point, but things didn't really work out in the end. So what's going on in Brazil?
Sure. It's amazing how Brazil and India are very much alike in so many ways. Brazil had a partial ban on vaping. When I say partial, because the legislation in 2009 was flawed legislation because they didn't consider the manufacturing. So it was forbidden to sell, to import, and to advertise, but they forgot to put manufacturing, so someone could manufacture but not sell some products of vaping devices. It was very weird. Anvisa spent the last 4 to 5 years discussing and debating the subject, and this year they doubled down on the ban. So now we have the word manufacturing on the prohibition, but they also put two other words, transportation and storage, without specifying that it was only for commercial purposes. That's why we had a problem in the banning of the transportation of vaping devices, even for consumers in domestic flights. Anvisa also put a specific article saying and stating that it's forbidding to enter Brazil in any way with vaping devices. So it's considered importation even for your own use. But that's okay. We wanted to at least have the liberty to carry our vaping devices and bring with us in our domestic flights. And that's when we, Direta, and the consumers reach out to ANAC, and that's part of the Samrat piece article about the bans on flights in Brazil. And because the text made by Anvisa was very flawed, the words, the phrases chose, I don't know if was a poor regulated job or it was intentional, but in practice, it means ANAC understood it was needed to ban even for domestic flights, even for the consumers' use. And Samrat was telling something that is very interesting and is happening in Brazil also, because look at this legislation. It's forbidding to buy, to sell, to import, to manufacture, but it was never forbidden to have or use a vaping device. This is the perfect recipe for a black market, a illegal market. Only in 2022, we had a little bit back in 2019. This is a statistic coming directly from the federal revenue. The federal revenue in Brazil is like the IRS. It's an agency that treats taxes, customs, everything about this like the IRS. The federal revenue of Brazil does that. In 2019, we had 22,000 apprehensions of units of vaping devices. In 2022, we have almost 1.1 million units. And in 2023, we have even more, 1,182,000 units confiscated. And this federal revenue in Brazil went to Anvisa in an official meeting. The secretary, the chief, the CEO of the federal revenue in Brazil went to Anvisa and told them, we cannot make our job because nobody thinks this product is banned. Everyone is using, and what we are confiscating is 10% or less that what actually enters Brazil. So we cannot do our job. This product must be regulated in somehow, but the prohibition is simply not working. So this is not an opinion, because I am a vapor and a consumer. We have extensive coverage of the situation in Brazil, and the ban that is already happening for the past 14 years, it proved that it's not effective. We have to change something. But we have all the same problems Samrat is facing in India. We have the anti-vaping organizations. We have WHO recommending the restrictions. And the LMC countries are receiving a lot of attention from Bloomberg. This is public. This is very well known. We have even some articles that I wrote myself showing exactly what are the agencies, the organizations that are receiving money, and it's not small bills. We are seeing millions and millions of reais and millions of dollars in the exchange coming to Brazil, not to make awareness campaigns, not to make scientific studies, but to make lobby. It's very specific to maintain the ban, not to prove, okay, let's make scientific research and prove that those products are more dangerous than smoking. We know that they are not, and I wanted that those organizations invest in research, because I know the outcome, what we're going to find in a very real and and careful study, but that's not what is happening. They're spending money just to maintain the ban.
Yeah, I mean, that's really sad to see that there is no shift, actually, that at some point we might have been expecting in Brazil. But I always think that it's a really positive thing that you guys exist there and you're making sure to be vocal about all of the myths and misinformations. And where there are, like, fights to fight, you're there and you're present. And one of those case studies is actually what Samrat wrote his article about, right? So Samrat, I want to ask you a question about your article, and maybe you could walk our listeners through, you know, what case studies have you been discussing and highlighting in your article, and why it is important, like what was happening during the flights, what kind of bans were they implementing, and how consumers were reacting. In case of India, Brazil, whatever you have in your article, basically.
Sure. You know, I've been a journalist on THR, my focus has been on what's happening in the LMICs or the developing world, which is where most of the smokers live and which is where most restrictive policies unfortunately are. So if you go to filter and search for articles, I have written, so I've written across countries. I'm part of the WVA group in which also Alexandro is. And he once and he wrote a message saying that, hey, this is a small win. And I was like really shocked, you know, that, okay, you know, it's not small, it's a big win. Because, you know, Brazil had this ban for three months. And we have it now for almost 4 years. So I know if Alexandro and the consumer advocates in Brazil had not managed to revoke this, then what would have happened? You know, because I can tell you what's happening in India right now. So these products are banned. Now, a lot of people travel, right? India is a large country and so is Brazil. And, you know, to get from point A to point B, people take a lot of flights. Now, they just confiscate this. You cannot carry it in flights. So I know people who ship their products, you know, to where they are going or buy something, from like, you know, really on the street, and they know it's fake and it's going to harm them. You know, some people just smoke. So the number of people who have written to us saying that we are forced to go back to smoking because of this, you know, because if you have traveled to somewhere for a week and you cannot, you know, obviously you're going to smoke. Or if you have not been able to find a product, and not always where you travel that there are, you know, because these are illegal products. So you have to know someone to get them. It's not, I mean, sometimes you can find them off the street, but those are definitely fake. So it is a huge cause of harassment for vapors and unnecessary harassment because, as Alexandra pointed out, you know, the text of the bill or the legislation mentions transportation and connection to commercialization, right? But I find it remarkable that Alexandra caught on this, brought this up, wrote to them. Because that was a really a smart thing to do, because this is exactly what happened. You know, the same bill exists in India. It's exactly the same wording. And a month later, after the ban was imposed, the aviation authority in India used that language to say that, okay, you know, carrying of vapes, even for personal use, is banned in flights. So I know how serious the problem is. People don't realize because such bans don't exist in most countries, right? So unless you have faced something like this, you do not realize how, frustrating and, you know, I mean, imagine being forced to smoke, right? When you don't want to smoke, but at the airport, you cannot have it. Where you go, you cannot have it. So that's the worst thing that a vapor can face, that you're, you know, you don't want to, but you're being forced by your government or by authorities to smoke. So then I got in touch with Alexandro and I saw the incredible amount of work he had put in. You know, he had written to the government authorities, he had pushed this whole thing, he had written articles on it. They're also having representations to the government and, you know, having street protests. So incredible amount of work done by them. And it's also truly inspiring, you know, what he has done, what his team has done, what consumer advocates collectively have done in Brazil. And I thought that was really inspiring story to tell, you know, because we don't have many good news in the field that we are in. You know, we always have, okay, one bad news after the other. So when there is a good news, and it's worth celebrating, it's worth celebrating the people behind it. It's so that was the reason I wrote it. I thought it, and also it gives you an insight into what's happening in Brazil regulatory wise. What are the voices of the people there? So it was really satisfying to write it, and I hope people also got some takeaways from it in terms of the regulations in Brazil and also what consumer action can achieve. You know, and I think this is a great example of that.
Definitely. I loved the article when I read it, and that was instantly like, I want to talk to these people in person and record a podcast on that. And it's also very fascinating, not only in this case, but in other cases as well, how vaping regulation spreads to individual freedoms, how it restricts people to carry on, for instance, a vape in their luggage, and where they're like, You had this story of a man who was whose vape got confiscated, like in a crowd of other people, and how he felt like a criminal, which is insane to think about that, right? So it's very important that there are consumers and people who will talk about these issues and push back. And that's exactly the story I want Alexandra to tell. How this happened? How did you guys push back? Because, as correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a kind of a clarification at first that it would not criminalize consumers, but at the end the policy ended up criminalizing
persons. Sure, because Anvisa published this new regulation I think November or December of last year, because they put this regulation in the public consultation. So we read the document before it was approved, and we already saw something wrong with the phrases and the use of the words, because it didn't specify that those words were for only commercial purposes. And still now, there's nothing specifying that. We made street protests and public protests and social media campaigns. We sent a lot of emails to Anvisa, telling them and asking them to change the phrases and the way they are communicating this new legislation. They didn't change that, but we made so much noise that they felt obligated to, in their meeting, to approve this legislation. Their online meeting was live on YouTube. Two of those the directors, including the president of Anvisa, said that those words and that regulation was only for commercial purposes. This is not in the bill, this is not in the legislation, so anyone who reads it and you don't give them this context will think that storage and transportation is completely banned also. That was the fragility of the regulation, and I think that is a poorly written regulation, because a regulation shouldn't be explained further. You should read the text and understand the text exactly as the agency wanted. Anvisa went even further, and they published a website with a Q&A specifying that we are not discussing about the use and the possession, so we're not prohibited the use and the possession of vaping devices. We are saying that you shouldn't be using, because those products are very harmful, but even if you want to use, you can only not sell, and etc., etc. So they made though that Q&A webpage, but I don't understand how an agency must have a Q&A page to explain legislation that should be complete and very specific and very well explained. And what we said that Anvisa, the new regulation, would have unintended consequences, and that happened with ANAC. So ANAC is the agency that controls flights in Brazil, and they understood that transportation and storage was really forbid in Brazil. So they banned it on, and they were not wrong, because that is the interpretation directly from the text. And then more noise for us, more public campaigns, more protests. And then ANAC went to Anvisa to talk between agencies in a meeting or of some sort. And they changed their minds and they go back to the way that was always the way they did things. Like, you cannot go to check luggage because you have a battery and it's a security concern, but you must put in your accompanied baggage. I think it's a carry-on luggage, so you can have your vaping device with yourself, with your pockets, in your carry-on, in your hand luggage or whatever. So that's what happened. I think that we didn't have made so much noise and so much efforts to show ANAC that Anvisa was in the wrong way, and they didn't explain exactly, and that they didn't put what they really wanted to put in the legislation. I don't know why. I don't know if it was a poorly made job or intentional, but we made it to make ANAC understand the regulation as Anvisa wanted, at least. And I think that if we didn't had the declaration of those directors, we wouldn't be speaking right now, because the vaping devices would be banned still in flights.
I think it's an amazing win and really inspirational for activists who are probably listening to us, because it always makes sense. It might be a challenging road, but it always makes sense to push back and fight. And on that note, since we're running out of time, I want to ask my final questions, and I'm going to get back to Samrat. And this will be a short one for both of you, and maybe Samrat can start and then Alexandro can go on. What do you think would be your message for the consumers, for harm reduction advocates, for vapers? Because we've been discussing a very particular case study and we can drive conclusions from that one. So your message to the consumers.
Yeah, so, just a quick, so I'll connect this. The same assurances were given by Indian authorities after the ban that, the use and possession will not be banned. And still they did it. The point being that, Alexandro's wondering whether this was intentional. It was. It was a template, which brings me to say that as consumers, as vapers, it is good to stay aware of what's happening around us, right? The best thing that you can do is to have information, be invested, and be up to date on what's happening around you in this field. Because there's a lot of copycat legislation happening. And if, Brazil and India had a similar voice and vapors came together and fought it, it would be a lot more meaningful. So the best thing you can do, or input you can have, is to stay updated about what's happening in THR across the world, in your country. There are, you can follow your advocacy organizations, which obviously update you all the time. You can also follow a magazine like Filter, which is focused on harm reduction journalism. There are newsletters. WA, I'm sure, has one. The Nicotine Science and Policy has a newsletter. So, you get bits of information from around the world, what's happening. So you are armed with information. Next, what you can do is speak about it as much as you can in social media, in your circles. Because the more vocal you are, and the more you talk about your stories and of people around you or of your community, the more impact it can have. So, that is at a very basic level things that you can do. You can also then become part of advocacy organizations, book direct, support DIRETA, support WEA, AVI, so that we can have a bigger voice and then represent more people and be more forceful.
Thank you. Thank you. Absolutely. Cannot agree more with all the points that you've mentioned. Alexandro, would you want to add something?
Absolutely the same that Samrat just said, but I also would like to compliment, because a lot of people doesn't understand the power they have. When you send an email to a senator, to a congressman, to anyone who is in politics, your email matters. It's not something like, because Brazil is known as a country that has a lot of corruption, and the politicians doesn't care for their population, their society. But actually, when you show them, or not the only politicians, but those who are ahead of those agencies like Anvisa, ANEC, when you show them that you don't agree with something, they think, well, it's just an isolated case. Is it just this guy, or there is a lot of people behind him? And then a second email arrives, and a third, and a fourth. And then the guy is thinking, well, I want to be in this job for my whole life. I want to maintain my status quo. I want to keep a politician, a big shot and a big figure. So they will, even if they don't care about you per se, they will care about your opinion and your the force of the consumers, the desires of the society, because they want to stay on their job. So even if you don't think they're doing because they are a nice people and they want the world to be a better place, they will have to take some action because they want to keep their jobs. And that's when you send an email saying, I don't agree with you. I think that you must change this legislation. This is making my life harder. This is harming me. You will matter. Don't think that, oh, I will do anything because who am I to change things? I am, at the end of the day, I have 8 years of experience in tobacco harm reduction. I'm a journalist, blah, blah, blah. In the end of the day, I'm a guy who quit smoking using vaping devices. I'm just a guy who dedicates time and effort to make something. And I just found other people that were willing to go to the streets and put a t-shirt and shout to Anvisa, we won't accept that. We won't save lives and whatever. And that worked. Because we matter. Even if they don't think so, we matter and our actions matter. So even the tiniest action you can think of, send an email to your congressman, to your senator, to whatever you think that you voted for. You voted for that guy, send an email for him. Maybe you won't ever have a reply, receive a reply, but he will receive it, and that can have ripples that you have no idea in the future that can change things for the better. So that is my final message to you all. Thank you so much for the invitation. It was a pleasure to meet Samrat online, and I hope that I can see Samrat in person in the future, of course.
Yeah, complete pleasure. Yes. Hopefully we'll meet in person one day.
Thank you so much, both of you. I'm not going to add a single word to what you said to consumers, because I think it was very comprehensive and inspirational. Just listen to those guys, because what they say is correct and right. I'll just remind our listeners that in the description, you'll be able to find more about Direta and the Association of Vapers India. And also, we'll make sure to insert the link to the article as well, because we talked a lot about it, and it might as well be good for you to take a look at the article itself. And thank you for staying with us. Just a quick reminder, we will be back with a new episode very shortly, because we launch episodes once a week. Vape on and keep being amazing. Thank you.